This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Mental Health Channel. Make sure you connect with us on Facebook to receive the latest programming for your convenience simply at eHealth Radio. Today, we are visiting with Dr. Charles Parker, writer, nationally recognized speaker, neuroscientist, and psychiatrist with 43 years of experience that takes on the medical community and provides cutting-edge solutions for professionals, parents, and patients. Dr. Parker, welcome to eHealth Radio.
Eric, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, you're very welcome. So tell me, first of all, what is ADHD, and is it real, imagined, or actually biologically based?
Well, it's biologically based. It's neurophysiologically based. It really has something to do with the way the prefrontal cortex, that area right up in the front of your brain, isn't working right. And what happens in it is that there is a relative working memory deficit. It means that what ordinarily happens in working memory, and the thing that separates us from cows and cats and dogs, is that we see something, we think about it, we see it and think about it, we jump on it, do something about it, and we carry that in the next day. So here's a problem, here's a solution, carry it the next day. Cows and cats and dogs don't do that very well. And so humans are different in that regard. Most people who have what's currently called ADHD, and that term is changing dramatically as we speak. I'm a strong proponent of changing the term entirely to executive function disorder, but laying that aside, ADHD is the term everybody's using now, so we need to talk about it in that reference point. But what happens is with a person that has ADHD, executive function disorder, there's a desynchronization that occurs. That part of the brain that should be working right isn't working right. And what happens is there are several different things that can happen in that desynchronization where it's not working. Here's the thought, here's the action, and take it into the next day. What happens is people will actually act without thinking. They frequently, this is the most frequently missed one and not in the book, not in the diagnostic manual, they think without acting. And that isn't necessarily OCD, but could be related to obsessive-compulsive disorder. And then we've got, I'm not going to think, I'm not going to act, and it looks like they, according to the diagnostic manual, have, quote-unquote, avoidant personality disorder. That is not a personality disorder 90% of the time. That is a very specific biologic disorder associated with attention deficit disorder, executive function. It's really not associated with attention deficit disorder because attention deficit disorder doesn't really consider avoidance as a part of the problem. But being that, that's kind of what we're talking about with working memory.
Well, how did your experience with SPECT brain imaging change your practice and your view of mind function?
Well, it was a real privilege for me back in 2003. I was into this whole thing of thinking without acting that I just described to you. I've been observing that process of what we might call unmanageable cognitive abundance, way too much thinking and getting stuck, since in the range of early 90s, around 90 up to 96, somewhere in there. And I read Amon's book, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, and he's in California, and I said, hey, Amon, you need a D.C. office, and I'm your man, and let's get together. We opened a D.C. office, and we started doing brain scans. I wanted to do that with Daniel Amen because he is the world thought leader on the practical application of using single photon emission computed tomography. That's a bunch of words, but it's really a highly technical nuclear medicine review for how the brain actually functions. You can see how it's functioning. And until this time, with this new SPECT imaging and what's going on with studying brain function, we have been diagnosing attention deficit disorder based almost entirely on appearances. So it's very, very common that someone would come in to get an evaluation and the questioner, the person doing the interview, would say, well, what does your teacher think? You know, what do your parents think? Instead of, what do you think? What's going on in your brain? Because the questions about brain function are really not in the current, question group. They're not used frequently. So I said, well, I've just got to sit down and put all this experience that I've had with looking at brain imaging and really thinking about mind function into a specific format so that people can use it with their doctors, and that's what we set out to do.
Why do so many have bias against ADHD meds and diagnosis?
That is a key question, and I'll tell you why they have a bias. It's because right now, the way we're treating human beings in the office is by appearances. It's almost, for want of a better expression, it's the nonsense of non-science. We're not using brain function science in the office, as we should be, to really understand what's going on with human beings. We're diagnosing them on how they look. Hyperactive, inattentive, and combined, if you think about it, are almost purely appearance diagnosis. How you look is not who you are. And so I think it's time that we need to move further. And I think the public knows that there's a problem with the non-science, and they have a significant disregard for medications, which are not dialed in precisely. They're dialed in rather whimsically. They're not dialed in at all most of the time. It's like, hey, take this and tell me how it goes. I misspoke there. I mean, too often they're not dialed in correctly. Oftentimes they are dialed in correctly. I have to give credit where credit is due. But we see so many second, third, fourth level opinions. I just saw a woman yesterday in my office who's been treated since she was 11 years old. She is 23 years old. I can't tell you the number of people she's seen. And her diagnosis regarding what we're talking about from executive function point of view was completely missed because they were looking for hyperactive, inattentive, and combined, and she had none of those ADHD criteria. So there's nothing wrong with the ADHD criteria except that they're exceedingly superficial. They really don't deal with, as I said a moment ago, the human being, who they are as a person. They deal with them how they look.
Today we are with Dr. Charles Parker, writer, nationally recognized speaker, neuroscientist, and psychiatrist with 43 years of experience here on eHealth Radio's Mental Health Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Dr. Parker, what are the real problems with current diagnostic categories?
Well, it's just that, what we were just talking about. It has to do with appearances. I mean, if you think about, so many people come in, and in the first part of the interview, they ask me the compelling question, which is compelling if you're thinking superficially. Do I have ADD or do I have ADHD? This is so commonplace and so, in my opinion, absolutely meaningless. Absolutely meaningless. How a person looks is nothing to do with their ultimate brain function. We've seen people that do very well on, for example, the Connors Continuous Performance Test, which is a very sophisticated, fast test with a computer to see whether their brain is working correctly. They actually pass the test. We take a picture of their brain to see if they have a brain function problem with quieting of the prefrontal cortex. Their brain isn't working right when they're really concentrating, but they pass the computer test, but clearly have ADHD executive function problems based on looking at their brain function. So what happens is the whole idea of diagnosis is under serious revision. This isn't just my point. This is pervasive throughout the land. I mean, I stand with several other individuals who have a problem with the current revision to the diagnostic manual DSM-5. Many of the thought leaders, including the chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at Stanford, the ex-chairman of the Department at Duke, think that the diagnostic manual is significantly outdated in terms of contemporary neuroscience.
What are the problems with ADHD medications?
Well, there are several problems. First of all, they're very, very useful and exceedingly helpful if they're used correctly. But what happens is too many think of them as kind of aspirin or milk of magnesia, you know, take it until you feel better kind of thing. And There are no specific clear parameters that are oftentimes, there are none, but I would say most of the time, around 90% of the time, there are no clear parameters given to the patient regarding the duration of effectiveness, the fact that the medication has to pass through the body to get to the mind is uniformly ignored, so metabolic rates are ignored most of the time, and medication is not titrated, that is adjusted in dosage, based on several different commonplace variables that are just really significantly overlooked. So what happens is we've had people, you know, I've been all around the country speaking to my colleagues who've argued with me on this point. You know, I give them, I've heard a physician who is actually on the faculty of a noted New England Ivy League medical school who said, I give a person three prescriptions. I give him Ritalin, I give him Adderall, I give him Vyvanse, and come back in a couple weeks and tell me how they work. This is not appropriate medicine. It's not science. It's capricious, and people suffer because they have no idea what to do when they go home. We wind up seeing them, as I said, in second opinions down the road. So what happens is we need much more precision with the use of medications. They have a very clear expectation of duration of effectiveness. We should know about that. We should teach our patients that. That's all in the book. We should know about the various metabolic influences that can turn the medication inside out so that it either causes a very quick side effect with a very low dose or so that it doesn't work at all. We should know about the therapeutic window. What is the therapeutic window, the top, the bottom, the sides, and how that works? These sound odd and difficult because people don't talk about them. They should be commonplace, everyday discussions with every single medication check. And we do it every day in our office with every medication check. So, and we know that people are happy with those outcomes. We've done it wrong numerous times. You know, I didn't get this way. I didn't become opinionated like this by getting it right or by listening, you know, going off and listening to my colleagues and doing cookie cutter medicine. I became opinionated by getting it wrong and people tell me I was wrong. When I find out that I'm wrong, I'm going to think through more carefully what's going on. What's happening so often in the United States is that people are actually significantly in denial about the ambiguity of ADHD diagnosis. That thing of ADD, ADHD, that is a part of the symptom, in my opinion, of the pervasive misunderstanding that exists today.
Lastly, and in conclusion, tell the audience, why did you write the new ADHD medication rules?
Well, I wanted to set up the rules that I've been talking about here in some formal, easy-to-understand way, and the book is really written for the public. Not, I mean, my medical colleagues are going to read it by default because I'm certainly hoping that the members of the public give it to the medical profession because we do need to be much more careful about what we're doing. People are suffering. One of the reasons I wrote the book is because I know people who have tried suicide on the basis of not understanding the principles that are in the book. So it's a life and death matter. It's not the common cold. It's a very serious problem, and many people are overlooked because the criteria are so really inappropriate based on what we know about brain function. So many people don't get treated. They have lifetimes of being frozen in thinking, and they just don't get addressed. So there are many reasons I wrote the book, but those are just a few of them.
Where can our listeners find more information to be in contact with you potentially and also to purchase your book? Where's the best place?
Well, I think if you go to drcharlesparker.com, drcharlesparker.com, ADHDmedicationrules.com is a website that's up, and there's information about the book there. And there are links to the various digital stores to get it, Amazon and so on. So those are two places they can go very easily. If they want to read more about it and don't want to buy the book, they can go to my website, CoreSych, CoreSych, where I've been writing about this for 7 years. And put a lot of this material out there. so that they could just put it in the search engine on that blog site and look at the articles that I've written over those years.
Rich information. We've been speaking with Dr. Charles Parker, the author of New ADHD Medication Rules, Brain Science, and Common Sense. Dr. Parker is also nationally recognized as a speaker, neuroscientist, and psychiatrist with 43 years of experience. And the website of reference is drcharlesparker.com. Dr. Parker, thanks so much for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
Thanks for having me, Eric. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome, and this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Mental Health Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network, and we do thank you for listening, and until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.